Welcome to Dyslexics Wanted, produced by the Web Innovation Center for Dyslexia. This is Jordan Rich. This podcast celebrates the unique strengths and creativity so often the hallmark of people with dyslexia. Our guest today is Irene Bouchin. She's the author of Celia and the Little Boy, a story of two children trapped in the darkness and what it took for them to find their way out. A book not just for children, but for all of us, looking for answers to challenge. Irene was challenged through her early life by a mysterious force, dyslexia. It could have sent her veering off course, but thanks to her tenacity, strength, and spirit, she rose above it and became a successful educator and author. So nice to welcome you to Dyslexics Wanted. There's a lot to talk about, and I love your name. It rhymes, Irene Bouchin. That's right. Perfect.
Lucky me.
Did you marry into that name?
I married into that name.
You picked the right person. That's perfect. Excellent. Well, we want to cover a couple of things, Irene, and thank you for joining us. The first thing, of course, is you and your experience with dyslexia and the fact that you're a writer and a successful one and a successful person all the way around. Can you reflect a little bit on how dyslexia impacted you as a young person?
It's part of, you know, I started figuring all this out when I started writing memoir in 2008. It was all, I never knew what was wrong with me. And so certainly I felt marginalized and I felt stupid throughout every grade possible till I fortunately graduated high school. But even then, you know, I went to pick up my diploma on the podium and I knew that I'd have summer school ahead of me and all sorts of stuff just to really get out of high school. So I didn't know I had dyslexia. And there were no special ed things going on. And so my challenges were that I couldn't read the written word. I could see them. They were an interesting page of hieroglyphics, A, B, C, D, whatever they were, but they didn't mean anything to me. And they never came together. They couldn't create a sentence that I could comprehend.
You mentioned something that is universally talked about on this podcast. You didn't know what was going on. You didn't understand. No one explained it to you. I don't want to ever ask a woman her age, but obviously generationally things have changed a bit. Back when you and I were kids, it was a lot different. You just went along to get along and didn't know. And it's so frustrating, isn't it, Irene?
Right, right. It's disheartening. It's scary. It's isolating. It's demoralizing. Mm. It's really, really hard because everyone around you, if you're me, and you grew up in a community that was sort of thriving and happy in general, and people were really busy. And if you grew up like I did, there was a lot of stimulation going on around you. And I wanted to be part of things, but was sort of not able to enter any of the things that were calling to me because I couldn't achieve. I mean, I couldn't read.
And it has to have an impact on your mental health overall.
Yes. No question. It left a big gray shroud over my head of what am I doing? Where am I going to go? Where am I supposed to go? Everyone that I was friendly with was going right down the path and they were achieving so well and they lived next door to me and I couldn't figure out, they didn't know that I was dyslexic. When you say socially, I was very open socially. I love people and I was very well, communicated well. And so I didn't stumble around how to hang out with friends at the playground, you know, or any of those normal after school kind of things that we did. I got involved and always was involved in art, always was involved in games and, you know, with the neighborhood kids. And it didn't slow me down socially that way. So, my peers did not know I was a non-reader until I started writing memoir.
When was the turning point when you discovered what you were dealing with and how to deal with it?
Well, I only discovered what I was dealing with when I was 19 years old. My parents, to their credit, I mean, their huge of, you know, ignorance on one end and then their credit on the other, was that when I, at 19, I returned from, let's just say, an adventure out of town. I was pretty angry. I didn't really want to be around and I couldn't make it through college. There was no, where was I going? So I came home from being in California and my mother sent me to an organization called the Powell Associates in Cambridge and they tested me. What are you most like? And at 19, the psychologist who tested me, when he was done, and it was dry. The whole thing was so dry. You know, ink blots and, you know, answer this and write this and do. And when I was done after 2 days of testing, he said to me, "You have this thing I'd never heard of." He said, "You are most like a music teacher, an art teacher, and an artist," which all felt right to me. And he said, "You'll never be able to go to college or have any higher education because you just won't succeed."
That's a really inspiring message when you're hoping somebody can tell you what's wrong and how I can fix it. My goodness.
No fix it. No fix it.
Right.
And of course, my parents still were lost probably and wondering what was going to happen to their 19-year-old daughter who obviously doesn't have the tools to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fiery. I was really fiery. And I started hearing in my own head to myself this voice that has been saying to me since I was around 19, "You should write a book someday. You should write a book someday." And I thought, interesting thought, Irene. You can't write. You can't read. You can't really spell. But you think about writing a book someday. And it just sort of sat there.
And yet, I can tell you that I've talked to dozens of people who have written books and plays and composed music and have done things artistically and creatively that they were told they could never do. I think you said you were fiery, and I think that's an important aspect of your personality. So many people, sadly, are not. They don't have that determination and grit, and it's not a character flaw. They just don't have that in them.
Yeah.
So they fall victim to this. It's different today with so many more experts and people helping you through this process. What happened? Did you go to college? And if so, how did that experience work out?
I got into a small teaching school. I wanted to be an early childhood ed teacher all my life. I worked with kids in the summers. My friends across the street and I started a summer camp. We did all art projects with the local kids in the neighborhood. I mean, I just was creative. And I felt so comfortable in that skin, you know, that, and fortunately for me, my neighbor across the street, who went to Brandeis and got double promotions, she and I were best friends. And, you know, so it was a real, as I grew up and got clear about I thought it was miraculous that she and I actually were on the same page all the time, intuitively, intellectually, everything, except I failed and she succeeded, you know, because she didn't have dyslexia. And, but it never affected our friendship at all. Even today, we're still friends.
So how did you determine what you had, but how did you then start the workarounds? How did you start to accept it and work intuitively to find out how to best handle it? What changed in your life that way?
Well, when I got thrown out of by the second semester of in my little college that accepted me, I got thrown out by the time I was, you know, had been there less than 3 months because I couldn't pass the tests. Mm. So, I mean, I couldn't pass gym. I'd get an A in athletics and a D or F in my test. And I'd be lucky if I could get out of gym with a C. So anyhow, when I got kicked out of school, that was the last straw for me. And so I was like abandoned. I was blind abandonment. I was so angry for all the ways in which I seemed to not be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
That I knew that whatever journey I was on, it's almost like you became a little haphazard about life because what do you get to lose?
So interesting that you have spent a good deal of your life now in, I guess you'd say, the area of psychology. We'll talk about this in more detail now. That gentleman, whoever he was, who told you you have no hope, certainly wasn't a credit to his career and his profession, in my opinion. But that was a different time. That was then and this is now. Let's now talk a little bit about the memoir and about the writing. If you want to, you can share a little bit about your personal story with your family.
Sure. So just keep guide me back.
I'll guide you to the memoir. Let's talk about that first. Okay. Let's start there.
The memoir started in 2008. And it's interesting because I saw, I was living in near Curry College and I saw an advertisement for a course called How to Write Your Life Story. And it was a moment in time when my life was quieter and the air felt like it was open to this possibility. So I took the class. It was a week long and it was the, I can't remember the name of it. They'll all be mad at me that I can't, but it was the Curry
program for assisted learning? Was that what it was?
No. Oh, heck no. I was with real writers.
Oh, you were in the writer's workshop. Okay.
I was in the writer's workshop that lasted 6 days, and they brought in these amazing writers and people, and I had never written a word. Mm. And I sat down, and the first class I had was with a gentleman named Bob Atwan, and he said in the class, and I'm sitting there next to, I don't know who these people are, all I know is I made this decision, and I started writing, and the question was, is there something you wished you had told somebody that you never did, which is a great prompt. And I wrote and wrote and wrote, and suddenly the beginning of my life opened up in front of me, and I started to explore, and that exploration went from exploring my story pre-adolescence to my story in adolescence to my story through high school and after high school, and all the anger and all the displaced energy and all the confusion. It could have been completely, completely disabling. It could have easily been.
You know, when you start a project like that, which is so immense, and I've done a little writing myself, you think about, oh, the mistakes, the editing, the things I have to fix and all that. But if you're dyslexic, that's probably so high up on the list of, oh, my God, can I get through this? But then you realize a lot of people write and require editing. It's not just people with dyslexia. So it's not the form or the format, but it's the form. It's the content that you were generating, which must have been a very freeing feeling for you.
It was, I mean, it was really, I don't know, I was just overwhelmed by knowing that I was thinking all that, that it was all locked up in there or set, ready to go, shall we say.
Indeed. While we're talking, let me mention your website, which is your name, irenebuchin.com. Mm-hmm. Want to spell the last name for our listeners?
B-U-C-H-I-N-E.
But pronounced Buchin, very much.
Buchin, yep.
Okay.
It's pronounced Buchin.
Let's talk now about another project that you've been involved in, Celia and the Little Boy, the project that has developed over the years. It's a book. It's also an ongoing speaking program, a learning and education program. Share with us a little bit about this story and how it came about.
Well, in the fifth phase of my life, my son had just moved out of the house, and he has struggled with challenges, mental challenges, since he was very young, like seven. And he had to deal with, again, nobody understood what was going on with him, neither did I, but I knew that there was a really good human being in that package. And because he was frustrating to, you know, teachers and other people, I was really protective of his character. I just wanted to make sure people didn't stomp all over him. He may be challenging, but I didn't want them to stomp all over his character and make him think he was bad, there was something wrong with him. So I fought really hard for him. And over those years, which is actually part of how Celia and the Little Boy transpired, he left. He was about 23 or 24. And I woke up one morning. I'd been writing memoir, and I for probably 5 years. And I woke up one morning with an image of a little girl in my head. And if you see the book, you'll see I illustrated it as well. I've always been a creative. It came out through pictures and words. So I started illustrating this little girl who I saw. I mean, I penciled by the bed because as a writer now I'm like always ready. And I picked up my pencil and I started drawing this character in my head. And I saw this little somebody sitting on the top of a staircase outside, back porch, back deck, something like that. And she kept going up and down stairs. And I thought, you know, okay, I don't know who this is, but she's on a mission. And then I realized she was going, this is all in that morning dream state. She was realizing she was going under the stairs, and she kept looking under the stairs, and she was distressed. And over time, and I mean over time, first there was just her, then there was the up and down the stairs. It went on for 3 years, and I realized halfway through this exercise of drawing and writing and that it was the story of my son and I and what it was like to be engaged in a situation where a child is struggling and doesn't really see the purpose for being here, and the friend understands the struggle and has to go back to her own struggle to really be able to ever get to the place where the little boy and she could connect.
I was reading in your testimonial section, one woman wrote, "It's not just a children's book, it's a human's book." I thought that was a beautiful way to say it, because people are struggling at all ages, and the book has had an impact. Share with us what impact the book has had on others.
You know, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to be the author of that book for the purpose that it has a life of its own. And I'm so in awe of what the power of the story, because it's personal. But I have seen, as you said, people have, I have endorsements from professors at Harvard. I have endorsements around the brilliance of the metaphors. I have, my son's pediatrician said it's a good and important book about survival. I have friends, the people who, psychologists, neighbors, kids, and they say it from their own perspective. One young woman, I think she was 16, said, "I just want to make sure that when I have a child, that they know that this book is here and that we can talk about this."
The impact, Irene, of any kind of illness, whether it be physical or mental, on the individual, in this case the child, is obvious. But the impact on the rest of the family, the moms, the dads, the brothers, the sisters, is equally challenging. I'll put that word in there. So what you've done is shared this story, which came out of a dream. I love that. And you're also doing a lot of speaking and outreach. And talk a little bit about that. What do you encounter when you're out there?
Well, you know, as a creative and an educator, in my head, I've been an educator my whole life. And in my head, after I launched the book and started sharing the book in bookstores, it was Amazon, it was then on Amazon, but I haven't got any more of them there on my website, which you now have. I've been invited many times, and I've also fought to be speaking many times so that I can introduce how people can understand this experience more viscerally without being afraid of it.
Very important mission you're on, and I salute you for that, because it's so difficult in this culture to even admit that there's an issue with mental illness. And I have one more question, and we often ask this of guests on this podcast. Do you consider dyslexia on the wide scale in your life at all positive? Is there a gift that came out of the dyslexia, the gift of creativity, the gift of emotion? I don't want to put words in your mouth. What do you think?
So many gifts. So many gifts, really. I feel as though wasn't I given the prize in the long run. Number one, my creative energy I can accept it as not only an energy but as my training tool. I've learned to work around. I've come up with solutions for things. I owned a marketing company for 8 years, and all I would do, I hired designers, and I had, you know, some people to do a lot of the administrative, but what I would do is I would go out to companies when I was invited and talk to the people in the situation creating the program, and they would tell me all the words around what they hope they can achieve. And I would go back with my team and we would collaborate and say, this is what they want. I know it. I see it. I just don't, you know, and I know this is where we need to put the accent, and this is where we need to, you know, as a second heading. And I was on fire because I could see it, and I honed in on that skill. And even today, it doesn't matter whether, sometimes people ask me to help them in big thinking, but I'm very comfortable with the fact that I have the capacity to take a big, big, wide open, tremendous concept and break it down into manageable steps to get things done. And if I didn't have that skill that I was required to get in order to get my son through his journey, then I wouldn't be sitting here.
You mentioned you were fiery. Seeing a little bit of that fire right now in terms of your attitude and your drive, which is so compelling. We want to thank you so much. And the book that people should check out, Celia and the Little Boy, details at your website, irenebuchine.com, B-U-C-H-I-N-E. Thank you so much for reaching out, and thank you for sharing on our podcast. You've really brightened our day.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Jordan, and maybe again someday.
Thanks for listening to Dyslexics Wanted. Please feel free to contact us at our new web address, dyslexicswanted.org. That's dyslexicswanted.org. We welcome guest or topic suggestions. We want to share your story. Dyslexics Wanted is a production of the Web Innovation Center for Dyslexia.